Hello and welcome to the Champions for Social Good podcast, the podcast for people dedicated to social impact. I'm Jamie Serino, Director of Marketing with the Corporate and Foundation Solutions Division of Blackbaud. I'm here today with Brandilyn Barnett, Director, Partner Solutions Consulting Group, and the lead on Growth Fund with Global Impact. Welcome, Brandilyn.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Brandilyn, why don't you just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
So I'm born and raised in Dallas. I'm a Texas boy. But I guess for me, the core of who I am is really a love for creating opportunity. I watched a lot of science fiction growing up. And you know, I love to watch Star Trek and Babylon 5. And watching all these future worlds that people inhabited and all the incredible things that they've done to shape a better world than the one we live in really inspired me to be part of that effort, which led me to research and do development, work in the development space. So I worked in NGO work around the world and did international volunteering work, did foundation work, was at the Council on Foundations briefly as a researcher, head of analytics for a tech company, and now I'm at Global Impact. But through it all, I guess I've just tried to be in a position where I can have a social impact that creates opportunities for others.
I love that, and I love that it's derived from watching science fiction.
Oh, completely.
Because I have those thoughts too. Like, you know, when I see something maybe that's messed up, I'm like, well, would they have done this in the year 3250?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So, yeah. That's a funny derivation of all this.
Yeah.
So Brandilyn, you have an impressive background, and you are definitely passionate about what you do. Which definitely shines through. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your latest initiative now with Growth Fund?
Yeah. So Growth Fund is kind of like a startup being incubated within the larger Global Impact NGO. Global Impact itself is a 60-year-old organization that throughout its history has done great work. Started as sort of an international United Way that helped Doctors Without Borders, Heifer International, Save the Children, and some of the largest NGOs to get into the workplace, to raise dollars, and to be more effective organizations. About 6 or 7 years ago, started the consulting group, which I am a director on. It's led by Ann Canelli, who's our VP, who's a person that I love and has given me a lot of opportunity. And then a few years ago, so it's continued to innovate as an organization. And a few years ago, we started GrowFund, really, to put together a process where we could create a new kind of donor advised fund that took this tool that is now so huge. I mean, Fidelity Charitable just last year became the largest charity in the world. Mm. Their primary service is donor advised funds. So we wanted to take that and take away those $10,000 minimum contributions or $5,000 minimum contributions and use the DAF to bring that tool that's been associated with the wealthy and with philanthropy to everyday people. Mm. So our goal is to democratize philanthropy. So Global Impact is, I love the innovation that exists there. I mean, starting a consulting group from scratch that's now working with a lot of clients and get to do really interesting work, but then also having the courage to innovate and really start a technology company mm. and a platform and invest in it and work to build it through partnerships, through the staff, from the ground up. It's been really, really exciting, actually.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So I love the notion of the democratization of philanthropy, and I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the best ways I like to think of that, actually, is when I was thinking of coming on board with Grow Fund, because I was on the board before I joined the organization. I was mm-hmm. helping as just a board member with the Grow Fund product to think about how it might scale and how it might be useful to charities as well as in other settings. And I was at the time working at the Council on Foundations, and I was working with a lot of large institutional philanthropists and organizations, like everything from the Gates Foundation to Sloan, all the big names. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a reason that Bill Gates, for example, didn't just write a check or click a button in an online donation platform. Philanthropy is something that's more engaging, it's more strategic, and it's more emotionally powerful. So instead of doing that, all of these folks who had means and a desire to help, they put together an entity that was connected to them, that existed in perpetuity, that could grow through investment, and it was almost like a part of them. It represented mm-hmm. their legacy and everything about how they wanted to make the world a better place. So for me, when I first created my GrowFund account, to just see, you know, what is this platform capable of? I named it after my mother, who passed away a few years ago, the Gwendolyn Smith Charitable Fund. And I started crying. For me, it was just the biggest representation of, I think, what we're trying to do, which is to take that really engaging experience that philanthropy can create and bring that to a normal person who might only have a dollar. But they can create this entity, they can nourish it, no matter what, they're able to feed it. You know, if it's a dollar a month or $5 a month, it'll grow through investment, and then they can think more about their legacy, how they want to give through every facet of their life. Just like philanthropy empowers institutions to really connect to causes in the long term, I love that we can do that for ordinary people. And every time I make a grant out from my donor advised fund on Grow Fund, I think about my legacy. I think about my mom and what she left me and how she made the world better for me. And now through her, in her name, I can continue to do that for others. And that's what philanthropy is, right? Especially family philanthropy. So we're bringing that to everyone.
That's great.
And yeah.
Yeah, so it's a really powerful thing to be able to give to, like you're saying, everyday people. So tell us a little bit more about the process there and how you'd set one up and put money into it. And then especially you said you actually distributed a grant through it. If you could tell us a little bit about that process, that would be great. Yeah.
So GrowFund's very simple. It's an online platform. You go to mygrowfund.org. If anyone wants to start one, I encourage it. It's you can just try it out. You can open an account for free or put in $1 and just test it out. But you put your money in, you see, you have sort of a dashboard, you see how it grows through investment. And then when you're ready, it's integrated with GuideStar, and you can make grants out to over 800,000 charities at present. And because Global Impact has a global footprint, we have offices in the UK, and we work in Japan and in other locations as well. We have a lot of experience and capability for doing international grants. So we can send the funds anywhere in the world that you want, to whatever cause you care about. And to me, this democratization of DAFs, or that type of giving, of philanthropy, represents a bigger trend that I think is really exciting. And all around us, we see so many things are being democratized. You know, I can't afford a black car, but I can get an Uber.
Right.
I can't afford all the albums to create a collection with all the albums that are on Spotify. I can't afford to do that, but I can afford a Spotify subscription.
Right.
And that sort of change, a lot of it's spurred by technology, philanthropy is not immune to that. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a lot of democratization of a variety of tools, impact assessments getting easier. You all have integrated outcomes. There are other organizations working to create software that helps people see the impact of their grants or of their charitable contributions. That used to be something that you'd have to hire a firm to do or a professor would do in sort of the ivory tower. Mm-hmm. So I think that GrowFund is just part of this broader trend of democratization of the tools of philanthropy so that we can all engage with social impact in a more meaningful way. Impact investing is another great example. So for me, it connects to that bigger trend. And I just find that really exciting. It's a really exciting time to be, I think, in the social impact space.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. So we can't talk about DAFs and not touch upon the controversy around them.
Yeah, true.
So, there are two sides of the argument there for DAFs. So I wonder if you could, talk about, I guess those two sides and where you land and, what your side of the argument is.
Yeah. So I can certainly understand a lot of the criticism that has come upon DAFs, the idea that they are taking dollars that would go directly to the charity and instead causing it to sit in sort of a holding pattern where it's in, an individual's personal foundation, just kind of sitting there, and they're using that for tax purposes, not necessarily to directly engage with good. Mm-hmm. But I think what we actually can bring to that discussion excites me, and that's the idea that behavior that people are contemplating when they are talking about DAFs is really behavior of very wealthy donors. I, for example, or the people that I know, aren't going to put aside $10,000 or $5,000 and just have it sit there so we can get a tax benefit. We give, and we're going to continue to give. But if I can put away $5 a month or $10 a month, I'm going to give more over the long term because I have a tool to invest and save strategically. And then once a year, Giving Tuesday or whenever, I'm going to continue to do what I do. It's just going to empower me more.
Right.
And so I think that DAF behavior that gets a lot of the criticism and that is something that is worthy of discussion is the behavior of wealthy donors. And when we democratize this tool, we see entirely different behaviors, similar to what a 401k might do for an ordinary person's ability to invest. That doesn't mean that they create all kinds of fancy financial instruments to escape taxes. It just means that people have more when they retire for something they know they're going to do. Same with DAFs. When we make them accessible to ordinary people, we believe and we are starting to see that they will have more for something they know they're going to do, which is giving. I certainly understand the criticism, but that's how we approach it. This idea that democratization of this tool changes the nature of the behavior and makes it a positive for the world, and we can grow the entire pie of giving. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I like to imagine going to a kindergarten and setting up all the students with donor advised fund, making it a family thing. These kids weren't going to give anybody any money. But if all of a sudden their parents are able to put away a dollar a month into their DAF that belongs to the kid and engage them and educate them in what it means to be a strategic donor, what it means to be a philanthropist. Even if you're a kid like I grew up, you know, in South Dallas with not a lot of means, I could have done this. And then I can see myself in that circumstance as someone who can change the world and not just let it change me. Mm-hmm. So we can empower so many people. That's what philanthropy does. It's empowering. You're someone who can affect the state of the world.
Yeah, and I think just even using that word, because you know, I think a lot of everyday people do give, and I think a lot of children see their parents giving to maybe local causes, or they, you know, maybe in an old school way, get something in the mail and mm-hmm. they send the check, you know, and they'll see that. But the idea of, like what you're saying, philanthropy,
yeah,
and the idea of growing up into that, could you talk a little bit about that and maybe the differences there?
Yeah. I mean, especially for, I think, millennials and younger generations, they don't just want to do one thing. You know, they don't want to go to work and have that be separate from their social impact. They don't want that to be separate from their volunteer time. They don't want that to be separate from the products that they buy. Mm-hmm. So they don't just want to write a check to a cause and walk away. So I think what we are talking about with DAFs more broadly, I think why they've had such appeal is that they allow people to engage across multiple dimensions.
Right.
Especially when you think about including impact investing, which is our vision for the platform. If you care about the environment, for example, being able to put away a few dollars a month, while that money's growing, it can be socially impact invested in wind or solar power. Then when you're ready, you can make a grant out to Sierra Club or an environmental charity that you care about. Mm-hmm. So you're engaging there across multiple dimensions. And I think that is something that people are already growing up in, but we can provide a tool, a philanthropic tool, that's appropriate to that. Mm-hmm. More appropriate than just, you know, online giving is great, and it's still an online giving platform in a way. And I don't think those are going away, but there's a place for a tool that you can grow up into this idea of engaging across all these dimensions and really being strategic about what you're doing, what impact you want to have, mm-hmm. and being able to reflect. When you have money away in an account, it allows you to reflect and really be strategic about what you're going to do with it.
Right.
And I think there's huge potential for us to have a whole generation of more engaged donors, people who, even if they are making a one-time contribution, are like, what is the impact of this going to be? Mm-hmm. And then because they want to engage across those multiple dimensions, they might be willing to work with the charity that they're supporting to help them figure out what the impact is, mm-hmm. or to accentuate it through volunteer time. It's all part of this effort of engaging across multiple dimensions to me.
Right, right. And you do also talk about the idea of convergence. And so I think that I like the word you use, that you can reflect. It's also a more proactive way of, you know, rather than reactive, of engaging and donating. But when I heard you say reflect, I was thinking, oh, well, you could probably look at, you know, your past history and mm-hmm. kind of, you know, reflect on what you've done and feel proud and feel like you've contributed. So I think there are a lot of things there to grab onto. But getting back to what I was saying earlier is, you know, I've heard you talk in the past about the idea of convergence, and especially in this industry, and it's happening in many industries, but in this industry you talk about that quite often. So I wonder if you could go into that a little bit.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I see convergence happening everywhere, and I think you can't talk about the future of philanthropy without thinking about the convergence of what used to be completely separate tools. One example that I like to think of is an organization that we are partnering with called Charity Charge, startup based in Austin, Texas. And what they have done is created a credit card that's a rewards card, but instead of the reward being some miles on your, you know, through your mileage account on with an airline or cash back or anything like that, it instead takes 1% and sends it to the charity of your choice. So 1% of every purchase. What you have there is the convergence of two tools that used to be separate. Used to be finance, your credit card was separate from your giving. Mm-hmm. Now those two things are converging into one tool that you can use. Impact investing is another huge one, where these used to be two completely different tools. Social impact, granting out to charities or even supporting social enterprises, was completely separate from your investments with a desire to earn a return. Mm-hmm. Now we see the convergence of those tools into impact investing. And then we start to think about donor advised funds, for example, where you could have a user who has a donor advised fund, which used to be a separate product, putting money that part of it is coming from a financial instrument like that credit card, that charity charge card. And then when it gets there, it's impact invested. So you suddenly have all these philanthropic tools that converge into one, and the impact is amplified. Mm-hmm. And I think that's incredibly exciting. And you see that with even digital platforms that are being created, that are integrated across what used to be completely different platforms. It used to be you'd had your volunteer platform over here, you might buy it from one organization. You had your giving platform over here. And now you see a lot of those functions are converging into one. And it's empowering because it lowers costs mm-hmm. for participation and it simplifies the user process. So you can engage with any of these, all of these at once, sort of through one action. So you press a button or sign up for a service and all of a sudden you're doing all these things that make the world a better place, rather than just one thing here, one thing there. And I think that's the way millennials in particular, but also most likely Gen Z, although they're still, you know, they're becoming the next most researched generation ever as we speak. But I think that's the way that generation thinks about the world. So it's not a coincidence that the tools that are being created sort of fit that idea that things are interconnected
right.
very intimately rather than living in silos.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think that that we're starting to see the effect that generation has had on other generations too, cuz you know as we interact with our customers and stuff, it we see it across generations, the behavior. But I think that millennials could be credited with bringing in a lot of these notions and ideas. And one area that we see it would be in corporations, and you touched upon that a little bit.
Yeah.
And the idea of going to work, you know, working for a company that does different things, and the blending of your work and personal life and work and volunteering and,
yeah.
you know, making money, donating money, all these things, it just seems to blend,
yeah.
you know, more. So, you know, I've also heard you talk a little bit about that. So I wonder if you can get into some more detail there.
The best example I've come up with that is to sort of describe my thinking on that is think of a person who worked, had a good steady job in a coal mine in, you know, the 50s or the 60s. Might go to work at the coal mine. This person wants to make a difference in their community, so they leave the coal mine, they save, they buy a home, they volunteer with and donate to the local hospital. And a millennial now, and I think it is filtering throughout our entire culture, but that isn't an attitude that's acceptable now. For a lot of people, you wouldn't want to do that because the coal mine has a negative impact on health in the community. So if you care about the hospital, you might not necessarily want to work at the coal mine. Mm-hmm. And all of those factors sort of, again, converge into one set of thinking. And I heard, I was at a presentation the other day, and one of the panelists with me was talking about work-life balance. And I think that was a good description of it as well. Mm-hmm. The idea that for millennials and younger generations, there's not this scale, which has on one end work and on the other hand life, but rather there's just life. And you try to live a life where it's all in balance all at once. So you love your job and it contributes to your social impact needs, your desire to have a purpose in your life, mm-hmm. which contributes to your family and the way you can communicate and engage with them. And all of these things sort of build on each other rather than being siloed and having to balance at all times.
Right.
And I think that is something that's, when we talk about social impacts, we have to deal with. Because if you're creating a tool or an initiative that's only engaging people one part of their heart mm-hmm. or one part of their life, you're creating a tool that will probably be, in my opinion, obsolete in the next 10 or 15 years. You've got to engage people across multiple dimensions in as much with as much power as you can, whether that means creating partnerships or what have you. That's really essential. And corporate social responsibility is a great outgrowth of that sort of impetus. This idea that, you know, you can't just have someone go to work and then it's completely disconnected from everything they do. The company has to have values, communicate those values, and that's how they attract talent, that's how they retain talent. It has to be then reflected in volunteer opportunities, opportunities to sit on boards. Hey, what's the company investing in? Because mm-hmm. if you're investing in things that I completely disagree with, I'm out the door, because there's lots of opportunity in the world. So some of this may change if there's an economic downturn yeah. or something like that, but yeah. I think a lot of it is just part of the way, you know, the thinking that's changed. Not just for millennials, I think that's a particularly poignant example that you can see all around, but I think it's changed for a lot of people.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the line is going to continue to go up, you know, and we may see spikes depending on, you know, outside factors and stuff that you can't control, you know, that would affect people's behavior and their choices. But if people have the choice, and
yeah.
I think this trend is going to continue to happen. So yeah. what are your thoughts on now some of the, you know, obligations that you think companies have, corporations have, or, you know, what kind of advice would you give them?
So I actually think the space is moving so quickly. So a few years ago, we were saying, you know, you need to have your pillars. You know, your company or a consultant would go in and do a sort of materiality assessment and say, you know, education is what's most important to you as a company, so you should focus on that. And while that's still important, I think the obligation now is to really think about involving employees in this broader matrixed picture. So, for example, there are a lot of companies that we work with as clients that are incubating different concepts, social impact concepts, so social enterprises within the company, or they're inviting their employees to be part of a process where they identify different social enterprises that they want to start and have the potential to get funding from the company, or so impact investing dollars or grant dollars. So for me, the burden is on employers now to truly involve employees in the broad spectrum of, you know, corporate social responsibility activities. And also so my philosophy on life is actually that, you know, every job I do, and I stole this from corporate social responsibility, the sort of triple bottom line
right.
of the idea that everything a company does should benefit people, profits, and the planet. I kind of stole that from my personal life. Again, this convergence, and I did it without thinking about how all these things were connected. This was years ago. But I said that everything I do should benefit my career, my community, and the company I work with. And companies have a responsibility now to recognize that that's increasingly the way their employees are going to think
right.
and to live in that space where you can't just talk about, again, work-life balance and then expect people to, you know, sacrifice everything else or create the scale. They want, the same way corporate social responsibility wants to meet these objectives all in one with one set of activities and one strategic focus and purpose, individual employees within the company want that too.
Right.
And so that's why you need to think about how, hey, this person is here, we are giving them professional development opportunities, but we're also helping, if they have ideas, we're encouraging them to start a startup or compete in an incubation contest or something within the company. But we're also trying to help them get a board seat if they apply and, you know, they're at the right level. And so we're engaging that desire, just like we have this corporate social responsibility, this triple bottom line, our employees now have that too. And we have to respond to it and truly engage them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. So getting back to the DAFs that you provide, GrowFund, when a person, you know, goes in to, you know, to start to build out their DAF, are there recommendations or is there anything there for them to, or do they just sort of go through GuideStar and take a look at what's there? So how does that part work?
So there is the sort of GuideStar or search-based cause discovery where you just put in whatever, you can search by cause or by keyword or by charity name or EIN. or also by the cause area that's working in based on the US NTE codes, the charity type codes. But what we're really excited about is the opportunity to highlight specific high-impact work through what we call featured giving opportunities.
Okay.
So that's a page within the platform that highlights a Women and Girls Fund that we've curated that addresses the money is split between five organizations and addresses issues all along the spectrum of women and girls empowerment. So we've got, it supports International Center for Research on Women, it supports CARE and other organizations. So that's something that we're excited about. And then we can white label the platform or skin it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we work with, since we've taken DAF and really democratized it, we are taking it into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So companies are setting their employees up with it as an employee benefit. They hear about their HSA, their 401k, and their DAF.
Right.
I think about, for me, that's incredible because DAFs are something that was, in, 2 years ago, you needed $10,000 or $5,000. Now you just need one and you can get it in the workplace. It can
right.
be given to you by your employer, basically. And employers can then do payroll and matching and all that
right.
capability. But we can also take it into universities, where we can give, a university can build a culture of philanthropy on its campus
mm-hmm.
and set up all their students with DAFs, encourage them to give, maybe make it an amenity and take a little bit out of tuition. When those, you're setting them up with lifetime accounts and with this engaging experience, the university can then educate them about what philanthropy is, how
mm-hmm.
how to do it effectively, how to think about it as part of your overall financial wellness picture. And then as they grow, there'll be alumni, and the university itself will have direct access to the data on anybody that's signed up and use that, can use that to communicate with them in a more nuanced way. So cause discovery, in that sense, happens through the employer
mm-hmm.
or the university, sharing information on the causes that they care about as an
right.
organization with employees. And then one of the things we're really excited about, a lot of the seed funding for GrowFund comes from a grant from the Gates Foundation. So we are working actively with them to build in a lot of education and cause discovery into the platform itself.
That's great.
So you're a user who makes a grant out, there will be a pop-up or some feature that's interactive that says, think about replenishing your fund. Or when you're thinking about how much to put, hey, 5%, community family foundations, or rather private foundations, do 5% of
mm-hmm.
the balance every year. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe think about that as a strategy for you. So there's a lot of different strategies that we can employ to encourage, you know, productive reflection and good user behavior that helps them think about where they want to give.
Mm-hmm.
And even with that white label process, those companies can, companies or clients that we sign at an institutional level can customize all those future giving opportunities for their partnerships, for the organizations that they support in the community, or for the work that they're doing themselves, if they themselves are a charity. So that's how cause discovery happens, and we hope it to be an increasingly dynamic experience over time. We're really providing tools for people to learn about philanthropy,
right.
what it is.
Right.
Because we're democratizing it.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's just really important in general. And you and I had also talked about, you know, a little bit of the breaking down of the social contract, and so that's why something like this is important. You know, if people feel like, well, there's something that I've been saying recently that I think we have a little bit more of a culture of, oh, hey, look at this, it's messed up or it's broken, who's going to fix it? And more like, hey, this is messed up and broken, I should fix it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
or let's fix this together.
Yeah.
And so I think that with that attitude and the mindset and perhaps maybe a trend of a, you know, a slight erosion of a social contract, this is a tool, yet another tool for people to act on their own.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's sort of taking what community foundations have done for generations.
Mm-hmm.
and making it possible for ordinary people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're really excited to, we're starting to do more and more work with giving circles, where you can go into a community and let's say they have a problem in that community and they say, I want to fix it. Well, they can band together and create a fund
mm-hmm.
that's invested and basically endowed
yeah.
and can grow over time. And they can create this fund and begin fundraising for it immediately as they, as a community, think about, oh, where do, this is our community foundation that we are starting, even if it's just $100 to help, you know, we do $100 a year to help one of our neighbors to fix a flat tire when it happens or engage, like respond to an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
We can create this fund and, you know, donor advised funds can't send money to individuals, so that was probably not the best example, but they can send funds to like local charities in their community.
Right.
And they can create a 501c3. That process is very easy in the US, but we can create the structure for them to be philanthropic institutions rather than just charities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's incredibly exciting. One of the things for me is also, I love to think about the diversity piece of this. I mentor in Southeast DC, and my mentee has a similar background to me, you know, single mom, not a lot of resources financially. And there's this mentor program run out of Thurgood Marshall Academy. It's actually amazing. From the sophomore year to the end of high school, these students get a mentor, students who signed up. And when I was talking to my mentor about what I do, I was talking to him and his friends, they have no idea what philanthropy is. But at the same time, a grant from a local foundation is actually paying
right.
for that mentorship program.
Right. Right.
And so for me, it's this idea that I could now go to him and say, this is what philanthropy is. Here, you do it.
Yep.
You can do it too.
Yep.
And when we can say that, we can change what it means to be a philanthropist. We can change mm-hmm. who is a philanthropist. Anyone can become one. It mm-hmm. it means helping the world in a more thoughtful way, with in a more consistent way that's connected to the core of your values. Mm-hmm. Not just, I gave to this because I heard there was a disaster. But like, this is who I am. This is the change I want to see, and it's always there. It
right.
always lives.
Right.
And I love that idea where we can just, you know, we're democratizing philanthropy, so anybody can be a philanthropist. Anybody can. And we found in market testing that that word philanthropist is not popular, which I think is really interesting. So we don't use it in a lot of our marketing.
Yeah, right.
But I do think that, I mean, for me, I'm proud that I work in the philanthropic and social impact space. So
right.
I'm increasingly, you know, fascinated by impact investing, particularly a lot of the work coming out of, you know, a couple of working groups that I'm on around impact investing, and also conversations, hearing about what cities are even starting to do for what they're calling the impact economy. Like, really mm-hmm. fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm proud to have knowledge of this sort of philanthropy space.
Yep.
And I want a kindergartner, African-American, you know, 2-year-old or 3-year-old or 4-year-old to say, I'm a philanthropist. Or, you know, anyone anywhere in the United States and eventually around the world being able to say that. To me, I love that.
Yeah.
So for me, even though it's not popular market testing now, maybe it will be when we're done, if we do our job right, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Well, what term is popular then? What do they call the
so
person?
We use the term strategic donor or strategic giving,
Which
is, I mean, that's basically a definition. So we're using a definition. And I can completely, there's an association of the word philanthropy.
Yeah.
It's connected to race. And when I was at the council, I did a lot of, I led research there as a senior research manager. And I did a lot of work around diversity, equity, inclusion. And it's easy to see when you look at the data on who works, for example, in foundations demographically, mm-hmm. why there are all these sort of implicit understandings of what that word means. So we don't use it, but I think it is what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe there's a chance to change the definition a little bit because, yeah, I think it is... It's stuck in time, and as you said, it has other connotations to it.
I mean, we're disrupting.
Yeah.
And I know that's a popular word. You go to all these conferences now. What's really interesting is, we talked about convergence. What's really interesting to me is, you know, I was doing a session at South by Southwest, and we were talking about democratization and convergence, and all the nonprofits, the NGOs in the room were using terms like agile,
And
you know, we have to pivot.
Yeah.
Words that, and I'm like, oh, you know, I've worked in tech for a few years now. I was before at a previous company and now with GrowFund.
Yeah.
Like, these are actually tech words, but you're at, you know, Oxfam.
Yeah.
It's super interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
That these worlds even are converging.
Yeah.
And so we're all, it's a disruption. It's a disruption of the whole space. And I know that's a cliche word. That's a word. That's one of the words, you know, agile, pivot, disruption.
Right, right.
That comes up every conference or every, you know, meetup group in San Francisco. But it's true. You know, when we change the definition of who it is, we're disrupting the entire field.
Yeah.
But I think for the better. I think it wants to be disrupted too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there, I mean, we at Global Impact talk a lot about the Sustainable Development Goals, and I do some work there helping clients to map what they're doing to the SDGs. Mm-hmm. We need a disruption if we are going to meet those goals. It can't all be government. Private sector has to be involved. Employee giving has to be involved. Employee volunteering has to be involved. Individual charities have to be involved in tracking what they're doing and how it's contributing. Every part of our world needs to be involved in solving that. And so we need to disrupt. We need to grow this whole sector, create more resources, but also more strategic thinking. And hopefully we're contributing to that. I think we are.
Yeah, I think the idea that you guys have and what you're doing, I think it does. And just even, you know, you mentioned these sustainable development goals or the global goals. I think the UN itself is understanding that a different approach is necessary. And, you know, going from the millennial goals to the global goals and the fact that they're out there saying everything that you were just saying right now with partnerships and harnessing volunteers and using the private sector, and we all must do this and it all has to be this sort of matrix kind of thing. Those are all messages coming out of the UN as well. And so it just, they're definitely, as you said earlier, it's a great, exciting, and fascinating time in this industry.
It really is. I mean, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately is because of this, you know, convergence of attitudes and democratization of tools, it's not hard to imagine now what we would call a donor today, but a donor who wants to support, I'll use this example again, but an environmental cause, right? They care about the environment. And they have two choices. One is to donate to an environmental charity. That's always been a choice for generations now. The other is to support a sustainable social enterprise that may be a private sector entity in their community. What you then have is two kinds of organizations that once lived in completely different spaces competing for the same dollars from that quote-unquote donor.
Right.
That is an entirely different world. Yep. And it requires different structures. I think really innovative things are going to start to happen. One of the organizations we work with as clients at Global Impact, an NGO, just sold itself or got bought out by a large company and is now going to be the CSR arm for that larger company.
That's interesting.
So it's really convergence, right?
Yeah.
Some really interesting stuff happening that is really exciting because, I mean, I think back to sci-fi. We're creating, you know, this kind of world that has completely different rules.
Right.
And it's happening right before ours, and it's happening really, really, really rapidly.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you start to think about how we can't pretend like philanthropy won't be affected by artificial intelligence, for example, and we don't know how.
Right.
But that is going to change a lot of the way we do a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so it's all up in the air in a way. But if you go back to that sci-fi thing, that's what I find really exciting about it. Actually, one of my like ridiculous dreams would be to, you know, work with the people at, you know, Elon Musk, SpaceX, or something like that, and say, oh, if we're going to Mars, and we're, you know, corporate social responsibility, you're a company that's going to Mars. Let's start from the beginning, right? What if we started a whole planet with these principles of CSR, you know, impact investing, converge tools, philanthropy as something that's part of everyday life for everybody? Started a whole planet that way. What would it look like?
Well,
it might look like Star Trek or something.
I know. It's funny. I had the same thought, and then the negative side of that thought would be like, oh, then no one's going to want to live on Earth. And it's like, we messed up that planet, and let's go over here.
Air is a pretty good incentive. Open air is a pretty good incentive.
Yeah.
Oceans.
I'm just joking with that. But I had the same thought of, wow, we are going to Mars, and how can we start from scratch in the right way?
Yeah.
You know, if you want to think sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know? Well, great. Come around full circle. I want to thank you so much for your time and
thank you for
speaking with me.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so for our listeners, I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Champions for Social Good. If you'd like to learn more about Global Impact and GrowFund, you can visit them at mygrowfund.org. You can follow them on Twitter at GrowFund. You can follow Brandolin at BrandolinB. And of course, I'll remind you just to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. And you can keep up with the conversation between episodes by following us on Twitter at Jamie Serino
at MicroEdge LLC and at BlackBot. Thank you for listening.